Hello and welcome to the Gab and Jules podcast. Hello as well to all the Bayern Munich fans. You are European champions. Well done, you. Hello to PSG fans. You are not European champions. But keep the faith. Maybe one day, you will get there. We have a big show today. No Gabriele Marcotti. He's on holidays with his family somewhere in Scotland with no reception, no television, no phone. I don't know how he's going to do it. But we've got Stuart Robson, far more handsome and knowledgeable. And also, to go back onto this final, we welcome Jan Agafortov. Jan, if I told you a year ago that this Bayern team would have this incredible run into the Champions League, that they would win the whole 11 games that they played in, that they would play such an amazing style of football, that they would destroy Barcelona, destroy Chelsea, beat Lyon, beat PSG in the final, would you really have believed me?
I wouldn't believe you at the start of the season that Bayern Munich could be one of the favourites. But if you asked me in November, when my club, Eintracht Frankfurt, beat them 5-1 and Niko Kovac was fired, Hans Flick came in. Okay, we knew Hans Flick, that he was a knowledgeable man. We know that he was a humble kind of leader, former Bayern Munich player with a lot of experience from being sport director, assistant to Joachim Löw. I would have said that will be very hard for them. So the way he has taken that Bayern Munich team back together with his management and, of course, the player is very, very impressive. And I think that we can now see, when you see the records and you see the row of games they haven't lost, I think we can say that the winner of the Champions League 19-20, it was the best team in the world who won the Champions League.
Robbo, you agree, right? This is the best, as close as PSG were maybe on the night, This is the best team in Europe by far?
Absolutely. And Hansi Flick did a great job in changing the tactics. He's gone almost back to Pep Guardiola's way of playing, where it's a high press all over the field. They're trying to hold a high line. They're trying to dominate possession. And that's where he has to take credit, because it's a massive gamble. To hold that high line, you have to do a lot of work on the training ground to get that absolutely right, because it is a massive gamble. So he did a very good job from whenever he took over.
What did he do exactly? Thomas Müller was really a bench player under Kovac. Alfonso Davies was not there because he only came in when there was injuries and they moved him back to left back. But what else did Flick really do in that team to make them that good, that strong?
Well, I think that Thomas Müller is a symbol of that revelation, but sometimes Müller has been out and he's always coming back. I tweeted yesterday that Thomas Müller hasn't touched the ball yet, so he'll probably score soon. And he was very decisive in that pass that he did. He took three persons around, players around him, got the ball back to Kimmich, and then the rest is history, as they say. But I think it is a very valid point with the tactics. I mean, you need to be relying safe on your own philosophy when you pressure so high. It's like Bayern Munich are hunting the ball and their positions all over the place. And if we look back at Barcelona, there were times they had a lot of chances. Lyon had five. PSG had enough as well. But still, they kept going. And we were all thinking of the starting 11 yesterday from Hansi Flick. What would he do? Would he get Pavard in a bit quicker? Because that right back four of Bayern Munich, maybe against Mbappé, will be a bit dangerous. But he knew that that would change so much. I'll be steady following your own philosophy. And I think what he has done is sometimes it's a cliche saying this is the football develops. But I think that the way Hansi Flick is doing it and the way he has that high pressure is like unbelievable. After 1-0 yesterday, what did he do? Did he go back? No, he got even higher on the pitch. And I think that I'm so glad that coaches and players who are rewarded for their way of thinking and the way of attacking.
And the amazing thing, Jan, is the fitness levels of the Bayern players. You know, when you see Lewandowski closing down, Thomas Müller closing down, the wide players closing down, the midfield players getting back and tracking back at the right time, the fullbacks getting high up the field and then recovering. The athleticism of those players has been magnificent.
I think it's a very valid point that Bayern Munich got everything. And we did an analyze before the game yesterday, the way they score all their goals. They do it in so many different way. And if you saw yesterday as well, there were times that Manuel Neuer, who we could claim he is the best goalkeeper in the world, but we can at least claim that he is the best goalkeeper in the world with his feet. But sometimes he just make that long ball. Sometimes you have to do it. And Bayern Munich can do everything. And I think very good point. They are so fit because high pressure means that you have to, when you stand high, you need a goalkeeper who is good because you got to play like Franz Beckenbauer did in the 70s as a libero for Bayern Munich. But their fitness level is unbelievable. And I think it is a warning to Barcelona. I think they can walk around playing football on other teams that is a bit stuck in the past.
And certainly with PSG, that fitness level in the last 20 minutes, PSG had gone down the window. But Jan, finally, I don't know if you remember, but maybe, I don't know, 8 months or 9 months ago, we were talking on the show about Manuel Neuer. Back then, he hadn't renewed his contract. Nubel was coming from Schalke. There was a lot of questions. And you've always said, oh, don't worry, he's going to sign a new deal. But not so much the new deal, is how he went back to this kind of form after the injuries, after the doubts, after the World Cup, even when he was not... when Germany were not great, you know, all the talk about Ter Stegen being the best in the world, etc. For Neuer to play a final of the Champions League, this is not a friendly, this is the Champions League final at that kind of level. This is incredible, right?
Exactly. And I think that sometimes for goalkeepers, when they're out with injuries, it's hard to get that rhythm back. But the way Neuer makes it, I think it's also a symbol of Bayern Munich. Because we are talking about Thomas Müller, we are talking about Manuel Neuer and that continuity that they have in this club. And I think it was also good yesterday to see all the players with the management celebrating out there. And if you notice, like Uli Hoeneß, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, Salah Hamisic, with Oliver Kahn. I mean, there's so, and Hansi Flick, so many former Bayern players. So that culture, that continuity, it's so important out there with all the good players they have around, and Manuel Neuer, so important. And even the situation where there was an offside position, he saved that one as well. And he was standing there like a statue of King David, done by Michelangelo, and it was like there's no chance you can come through here, and we can praise Bayern without criticizing PSG, because PSG were in the final of a Champions League final, and some great players in that team, but in this tournament there was all just one winner, and that was Bayern Munich.
I mean, there's lots of stories in that final, Robbo, but the way Thiago Alcantara controlled the game from start to finish when he came off was impressive. I mean, there's not many players in the world right now who can play the way he does, beat the press, organise, control everything, play long, play short.
And he didn't have it all his own way in the game. You know, in other games, he's had lots of time on the ball to pick out his pass. He's not really been put under pressure. PSG press high up the field as well. They tried to win the ball back in good areas. And he didn't always have a lot of time on the ball. But he always knew he had an out pass. And that was out to the left back, Alphonso Davies. So he didn't sometimes even look. He just knew where the next pass was. He played forward at the right time. He played around the pressure at the right time. He's an outstanding player. And I still think one of the best central midfield players in world football at the moment in terms of the creativity.
He has only 1 year left on his contract. He said he wants to go. I think Bayern are happy to let him go if the price is right. And whoever will get him, whether that's Liverpool or someone else, will be very lucky. But how do you replace Thiago? And do they need to replace Thiago like almost man for man, trying to find someone with a similar profile and similar qualities? Or do you go with a different strategy, a different profile? And also, how do you make this Bayern team better? Can they get even better next season?
I think they could. I mean, I'm very impressed of how Bayern, like a year ago or something, or 1.5 years ago, we criticized them a bit because they didn't take that, well, make a younger team. And Uli Hoeneß said, well, Robin Ribéry has done so brilliantly for us that we'll give them another year and so on and so on. And suddenly now they have one of the most young, most inspiring teams around. We have to know the history that Thiago was a bit frustrated because when he was out injured, he saw that Goretzka and Kimmich grew into that number six position very well. And do I think that Thiago will leave the club? Yeah, I think so. But I think that the next couple of days, now with the celebrations and everything, maybe Bayern will do a last try. I agree. He had a fantastic game. And also, which is quite interesting, because the big change yesterday was, of course, Perisic out. He's a big game player. He took him out and Flick put in Koeman. And he scores the winner. And everybody has the story about him being a former PSG guy. And now they got Sané, who will probably play for Koeman. in there as well. So he will, Sané will make them better because they will have a broader squad and he is a fantastic talent. But I think that Bayern has done some major decisions because Bayern got to survive to get the best talent in Germany. But they said no to Timo Werner. We won't be in for him. They have said no to Kai Havertz. They are confident that this team can improve. And when you see the young players, I'm sure they could.
You know, Coman, it's funny because obviously he's one of ours. You know, he joined PSG at 9 years old.
Well, I saw him a lot for PSG as a youth player in the European leagues.
And he was so good and he made his debut at 16. And then he didn't feel that Laurent Blanc trusted him enough. He left at 18, went to Juventus. I mean, he's won, I think, 19 titles. He's 24. He missed on the World Cup squad because of, I think, more of the injuries than anything else. But I would much rather someone like him scoring the goal, even if he's a former PSG player, and a Paris-born and bred kid, and Parisian, everything you want, than anybody else. So that didn't hurt as much as losing the game or anything like that. I just think that in those big games, when you were expecting Lewandowski to come up with something special, and he almost did when he hit the post. For someone like Coman, who's been in and out of the team because of injuries, who saw Leroy Sané arriving, like Jan was saying, and he knows there's pressure next season because Gnabry is not going to lose his place, for him to come up that big, because he was really good through the game.
And the great thing about Coman, and you could say the same about Gnabry on the other side, lots of teams are now passing teams. They try and pass their way through the opposition. The one thing that breaks down any defensive strategy is somebody that can go past another player with the ball. And Coman went past Kehrer on 4 or 5 occasions, and that just changes the whole pattern of the game. Gnabry didn't really do it on the right-hand side. He tried to do it with his movement, but it was Coman's ability with the ball that caused PSG most problems.
And yeah,
I think another point yesterday, who I've been through the German papers and I read on Twitter and everything, someone is a bit underestimated after the game yesterday was Joshua Kimmich. Because Joshua Kimmich was playing against Mbappe, and there was a lot of saying that you are so high up there. And yes, Mbappe, a couple of 2-3 times, he went past him. But still, how wise he is, how he kind of, he didn't come as much as Davis did, but still very wise doing his job there. And also a small point, I think, from the finalists, it's so good to see when Davis is like going for speed all the time, and then suddenly Alaba, that we still feel is a young kid, he's 28 after all, but still, how he secured Davis when Davis goes up, Alaba will always be there and look after him like brothers. And I realize, and I see that, and I will give that to Tuchel, I will give that to PSG as well. They've turned into a team. And Bayern as well, they're always talking about their brothers and we are a team, we are a squad. And you may say that's easy when you're winning. But again, there are teams around the world who should look at both teams, because I think that is a thing that we take out of these days in Portugal, how these teams are more and more important.
Yeah, that's a great point. For Kimmich, there was that, I think at the end, him and Gnabry just laid down on the pitch and looked at the stars. And I wonder, Jan, if they... I mean, remembered when they were kids at Stuttgart in the academy, and then they went different ways and then got reunited again at Bayern after different experiences for Gnabry. I mean, in the UK, they've talked enough about how he could not play for West Brom and the Tony Pulis, how he went to Arsenal and didn't work out for him. But I think for Kimmich and Gnabry to have been playing as kids together at Stuttgart, and now to be in the best team in the world, two best players in the world in their position, it must be incredible. I don't know what they were thinking or telling each other, or maybe they were not saying anything, just laying down on that pitch, looking at the stars and saying, this is it, that we've done it.
I think the main thing at Bayern, and I sometimes think of that, because I'm born in 67. My first game I remember was West Germany beating Holland and Bayern Munich beating Leeds United in 75. And somehow you follow Bayern Munich because there are a lot of things that they can be criticized for. They have some press conference sometimes. Uli Hoeneß attacking people and all that kind of thing. But I think that what is the difference between Bayern Munich and a lot of other clubs is that continuity, that culture they got in that club is like unbelievable. And I think that a Joshua Kimmich, he knows now, first of all, he got that Champions League trophy and he knows he can play there for 8-9 years. this is our family, this is our place to be. And I think they have managed to do that. And I'm always fascinated by Bayern, the way they can at the same time be a global brand, but then they are a very family club with a couple of Muppets sitting in a balcony doing the attacks on the people on the stage. And it's charming. And I mean, that is a fantastic combination.
It is, Jan, that's right. And again, they deserve to be where they are. Thank you so much, Jan.
Cheers, Jan.
Pleasure as always, boys.
Speak to you soon. I mean, also, Robbo, just a big up to Alphonso Davies. I mean, what a story. I know we've talked a lot about him, a 19-year-old coming out of nowhere, and now...
Yeah, and he showed great experience in terms of the way he played the game, understanding of the game, when to break forward, when to drop deeper. You know, he was the out ball. He's got a good understanding with Perisic before in the in the semi-final, in the quarter-final, and he had great understanding with Koeman. Because every time Koeman went infield, he tried to take Kerr in there with him, and that's when Alphonso Davies didn't get there too early, broke at the right times, and then they had the little combination play. He crossed the ball at the right time. He probably didn't play quite as well in that game as he did in... couple of the previous games.
I agree with you. And sometimes defensively, he was a bit in trouble sometimes.
But he's got everything you want from a fullback. He can get forward, he can defend 1v1 most of the time, he's got great pace, and he's the perfect left back these days.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I won't lie, Robbo, I didn't sleep much at all.
I'm sure you didn't.
I felt, and you can lose a match, and I promise you, I would have rather PSG losing 4-0 or 5-0, really being battered, instead of having chances at 0-0, maybe the best chances, having Neuer, Bayern's best player probably in that game, and being so close, and yet still so far, because Bayern did everything a little bit better than PSG. That's why they won, and they were the better side through the campaign and everything. But that frustration I had and the disappointment of like being so close, and then my kids called and they were crying and I was like, oh my God, and I was on a TV set somewhere and I felt almost guilty not to be with them. But you know that feeling of almost there, but just not, what was missing?
Well, I was looking at it from a neutral position. And after 5 or 6 minutes, I thought, Thomas Tuchel hasn't done his homework here. They were trying to play out from the back. They were playing balls straight into Marquinhos. I think they had it pinched off them 3 or 4 times. And then it all changed with one ball, big diagonal, out to Mbappe. They get in behind. Neymar makes a good run, and he obviously gets his shot away, and it's a good save. And from that moment on, I thought PSG grew in confidence, and they were able to play around the pressure. Bayern Munich didn't pressurise them quite as much. And it looked as though they, in that first half, that they had a game plan that was going to break Bayern Munich down. They just didn't take their chance. I think the chance for Neymar is a fairly easy one. When he gets sideways on, Manuel Neuer left a lot of space to hit the far post with his left foot, a player of his quality, you expect him to finish it. I didn't think Mbappe did enough when he was 1v1 against Kimmich on 2 or 3 occasions, and he came in on his right foot, didn't move the ball quite well enough, or didn't threaten to shoot and go past his man. So they're the sort of areas where they didn't do quite well enough. I thought in other areas of the field they did well. I thought the midfield three stopped. Yes, of course, Bayern Munich had more of the play. Yes, they had better passing out to the fullbacks, but I thought the defensive side of their game was excellent. Herrera got out and dealt with Davis okay. Marquinhos, blocked balls played into Lewandowski, also came out and pressurised in midfield as well. And Paredes, in the first half, picked out 2 or 3 excellent passes. So I don't think there was too many things that PSG could have done better apart from the finishing in that first half.
Yeah, and I think that's where the regrets are so big. I think the players really felt it, like this missed opportunity, if you want, almost like there was a game plan, and of course Bayern also hit the post with Lewandowski, and they also had chances, and they were very good on the night anyway. But the feeling of like being able to, I don't think any team in, not just in Europe, also in the Bundesliga this season, even Bayer Leverkusen, who beat Bayern Munich in the league, and Mönchengladbach as well, didn't trouble Bayern like PSG did.
So when before the game, what did you expect the percentage ratio for possession to be?
So that was exactly what I thought, because I really thought Tuchel would try to beat the press and then play quickly on the front three, who stay quite high on the pitch on purpose, so don't drop and help to build up from the back. Leave them three there, and then as soon as you beat that press, if you do, and you might not have many chances to do it, but if you do like four or five times,
that's when you got to take your opportunities.
Exactly, and that's where they created the most chances, to
so
be fair.
I would say PSG had more of the ball than I expected them to.
I thought
Bayern were going to dominate the game, and after that first 5 or 6 minutes, I thought, I'm not sure how PSG are going to get out here, because they're trying to play out from the back, they're being caught on the ball, and then suddenly they started to do it better. There was one moment in the first half which would was the ideal scenario to break down Bayern, and we talked about it on the show a couple of days before. I think Navas caught a cross, and there was a throw straight out to Neymar, who was in the withdrawn centre-forward position. Boateng came out, and his first touch took him to the side, so he was on the half-turn, and Mbappe made the run in behind Kimmich, and he overhit the ball, Neymar, and Neuer came out and swept. And I thought, if they can keep doing that, they're going to cause Bayern all sorts of problems. But they didn't quite do it enough. That was the problem.
You know what? The one that kills me is the Kylian Mbappe just before half-time, that ball from Herrera. And I don't know if he doesn't expect Herrera to cross the square.
Well, I think you, me, everybody that was watching the telly, shoot Herrera.
Yeah. But do you think Mbappe can allow himself to think that instead of
still being ready? He shouldn't be thinking that, but I think that's what's happening. So he wasn't ready for the reverse ball.
This one killed me, Robert, because I really thought, this is it. And Bayern are a great team, they're a machine, no problem. Even if Lewandowski is not on a great day, like on Sunday night, you still have other great talents, and no problem. And PSG is true, as much as they are a team in terms of togetherness and etc., they still rely a lot on Mbappé and Neymar. Yeah. 100%. So if those two don't have a good game or are not clinical enough, you're in trouble. But I still thought, even if they're not on a great, great day, one of them will take one of the chances they will get. Yep. And that was the one for me. Mbappe, with his talent, in that position, just before halftime, with three-quarters of the goal open on the left-hand side, and then he should soft on Neuer.
Even if he wasn't expecting it, he still had chance to control the ball and then pass it into the net. And I think the other frustrating thing, from a PSG point of view, is there was times when Bayern were playing that high line and players had made good runs and the player on the ball didn't see it. You know, they should have played it a fraction earlier and they'd have been in. And time and time again, Herrera a couple of times missed it. Paredes missed it. And Marquinhos missed a couple of chances. Play the ball in, he's in. And they didn't play it at the right time. And that's disappointing, because you think they must have worked on that throughout the week. This is how Bayern play. If you get a chance, you don't have to be too precise with your pass. Just get in behind them, in between their defenders, and someone can make the right run. And they just missed the opportunities on four, five, six occasions.
I agree with you. It's a shame, but let's just hope they come back stronger. They're still a good team. They have great players. I think they can come back stronger and come and do it again and have another go at it. But an interesting start. I think the last seven teams who were in the final for the first time all lost, which gives you a sense that there's a learning curve as well. Yeah, you can't just go to the final and win it, especially when you play against a team like Bayern or Real Madrid and clubs like that. And I think maybe on your second time, like Marseille did, for example, all those years ago, maybe then you have that kind of experience before.
I don't think we can get away from saying that Neymar wasn't at his best. And we saw in the last 20 minutes Neymar being the showman again.
Yeah.
When he get frustrated, he started going to positions he shouldn't be in. Then he starts throwing himself to the ground. So when things start to go wrong for him, all the bad traits came back out again.
That was the issue he had before when he arrived the first season. If you remember, there's that last 16 first leg at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. And he wants to do everything on his own. Every time he gets the ball, he wants to dribble past Varane and Sergio Ramos and Navas in goal and Carvajal and Cruz and Modric. And in the end, he just loses his game. And PSG doesn't benefit anything in it.
See, when he's got his football head on and he just wants to be a footballer and do the right things at the right time, he's a world-class player, one of the best in the world, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But he then becomes a showman and it's all about him. Even in the first half, because everybody's been talking about him working much harder, there was once in the first half where he chased around the back players. He was never going to win the ball. He wore himself out, but he did it for show. You know, Ace Kimmich. He then went to Sula. I think Sula played it. He ran after. He must have run for about 30 seconds chasing everyone. But he was never going to get near the ball. But it was almost, look at me, I've worked really hard. And then when the game wore on and things weren't going his way, that's when he lost his discipline. And you know, he started rolling over and throwing himself to the ground and not playing the right pass, getting deeper and deeper so he could get on the ball rather than playing in that number 10 role so he could pick out his passes. And that was disappointing for me.
He's always been so good in finals, in the Copa Libertadores when he was really young with Santos, at the Olympics, with Barcelona in 2015, even if Messi was so good that night, he also scored and was good. And I think maybe he built this game up too much in his head. I don't know, maybe the pressure got a little bit to him at the end. Maybe at the end, when he felt like we're going to lose this, the frustration got to him and he thought, okay, I need to try to do something. I struggle more with Icardi not coming on, I have to be honest, and Tuchel bringing Choupo-Moting. I know Choupo-Moting had a great cameo in chance against Atalanta in the quarterfinals, but that chance, for example, right at the end, you know, it's a little ball from Mbappe to Neymar, and then Choupo tries to do some sort of like back. I think Icardi could bury this one.
Yeah, I think Icardi played himself out of the team almost, didn't he, with that performance?
Yeah,
but Icardi's a finisher.
At the end,
he's a finisher.
Yeah.
But I think that something must have gone on that Tuchel didn't like the way Icardi played, and he didn't really show enough ability to get hold of the ball and make things happen. But yeah, Icardi, if he wanted a finisher, he's going to be much better than Choupo-Moting.
I know, that's the thing I didn't get. Even Di Maria coming off and Draxler coming on, I struggled a bit with that, and I was like, I'm not sure this is right. And I think they lost a bit of momentum, and maybe because Bayern has so much control, he tried to do something different and bring Draxler on that can bring you, he can take on players maybe a bit easy, maybe better than Di Maria.
And the bringing on of Verratti, I think, is a wonderful player.
Yeah.
But the way they had to play in midfield was quite a wide three, because Herrera had to go out and stop. He had to come in narrow at times. Then he had to go out and stop Davies getting forward. Yeah. Same with Paredes on the other side. When you brought Verratti on to play next to Marquinhos, Verratti wasn't going to make any forward runs. He couldn't get out to Alfonso. So he wasn't fit enough. So I'm not sure that was a good move either.
Yeah, no, you're right. Talking about Tuchel, if you were Leonardo, the sporting director, would you keep him now? So he won the domestic treble. He took this team to the final, albeit losing it, which no other managers in the PSG history had ever done. Is that enough to keep him? He's got one more year of his contract as well.
I'm sure he's a very good coach, but I don't see any empathy between him and the players. He looks very isolated at times. And I think when you've got those amount of players, great players, some excellent players, you've got to have some sort of empathy. And I don't see that with Tuchel at the moment. So I'd be very tempted to remove him from the job and get somebody like Pochettino in, who I think would be ideal for PSG.
Yeah, I mean, there were rumours on Sunday. I got a few messages, people saying, oh, there's talks about him being sacked. And then Pochettino, Allegri, or whoever they can find who's available, or go and get somewhere else to come in. I don't know. I think a part of me thinks that he deserves another season to try to see if he can build on this. You buy another right back, because Kjaer is a good player, but he's not a right back to start with. And I don't think he's good enough anyway for this kind of top level.
Because Kjaer, when he was playing before, he was the right side of a back three rather than a right back.
Or centre back is probably better for him than a right back. You'd have to replace Thiago Silva, who is leaving the club. You could bring Marquinhos back down to his best position with centre back, but then you still need to buy a holding midfielder, like a world class holding midfielder.
But could Verratti not do that job?
I don't think he can.
He's not good enough defensively.
Yeah, and in the air, and you need someone that's really strong there. So they need to find somewhere there. So I think if you tweak this squad a little bit, you could become better. You could become stronger, and you'll have another good next season. And I think part of me thinks Tuchel deserves that. But part of me also thinks if Pochettino is available, being a former PSG captain, PSG defender, knowing the club, knowing the city like he does, having that warmth that you said is a bit missing for Tuchel, but also the technical knowledge, and I think Pochettino could be potentially very good at the position. So I think there might be a bit of a dilemma there for PSG. But I don't know, we'll have to see.
Well, Leonardo's the main man, isn't he? You know, when in the tunnel at half time in the semi final, and against Atalanta, who's the person that's G'ing up the players?
You're right.
Leonardo. Talking to the players at half time, he's meant to be higher up the hierarchy.
And Tuchel is not his man. Tuchel was already there when Leonardo came back to the team, and I think to the club. And I think as a sporting director, you put key people in key, like your people in key position, and the manager is the most.
You've got the same understanding, you've got the same philosophy, whatever it may be.
Yeah, and maybe a relationship that you already had before, like Allegri and Leonardo, for example, which doesn't exist between Leonardo and Tuchel. So we'll have to follow this one. I think the good thing is that Mbappe and Neymar will be there next season. They've said it already. No one can afford them right now anyway. And just quickly, because there's a lot of people on Twitter who've sent me messages saying PSG don't deserve to win the Champions League because they're owned by Qatar. It's the oil money. You don't deserve to win. You don't deserve to be happy and whatever. Listen, I didn't ask for the Qataris to take over my club. You know, I didn't choose them. They chose PSG to invest in the club. They're trying to build a team that can win the Champions League. Of course, I'm not okay with being owned by a country that doesn't respect human rights and that has issues, and it's conflicting in my head sometimes. I'm a PhD fan since I was 4 years old. Again, I didn't choose the Qataris to take over my club, but yet I still want my club to do well. And I know I've got friends who have stopped supporting the club, who have not renewing the season ticket because they don't agree with Qatar and Qatar owning the club. I respect that and understand it. I feel a bit differently. Yeah, I would rather have the club being owned by the fans, for example, you know, or us having a big voice to do in the club, but this is not the case. And as long as they try to do the best for my club, I try to not really think too much about what happens in Qatar. Maybe I should more, but please stop the messaging about, you know, oh, you don't deserve this, you don't deserve that. It's hard enough to be a PSG fan anyway, and I was there when they almost went down 12 years ago to the second division, for people to like just give me the old money line and the Qatar line and the this and that.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, enough of PSG, Robo. Let's do the quick hits.
Let's go.
It's another Europa League triumph for Sevilla, who beat Inter Milan on Friday night 3-2. Robo, were you more impressed by De Jong and Lopetegui's game plan or more disappointed by Conte's game plan?
Well, I'm going to start with, if you're playing against Antonio Conte and Inter, you have to come up with a game plan to stop the ball going into the front players, because that's how they like to play. And he did that perfectly. Particularly Jordan stopped balls being played in, and really, Martinez and Lukaku didn't really link up. So if they can't go in there, their next plan is to keep switching the play to their wing-backs. And I thought Lopetegui came out with a game plan for that as well. The two full-backs didn't get too narrow.
Yep.
They were all ready to go out there and close down. So I thought he did that brilliantly. And the other way that you can break Antonio Conte's sides down is by switching the play quickly yourself. And at times, they had two players in wide areas on both sides of the field whenever they got good possession, because they kept on switching the play, and then crosses came into the box and there was De Jong to head one of them in. So I thought Lopetegui got his tactics absolutely right. And I was disappointed that Antonio Conte couldn't get his game plan to really work for them.
And even changing things, because Conte waited really late to bring on Eriksen, to bring on Alexis Sanchez, for example, when clearly, as you said, Lautaro and Lukaku were not really working out. And I was just waiting, like, come on, do something, because you're going to lose this game. It was 2-2 at the time, but you're going to lose this game.
And I was disappointed with the front players as well, because if you can't get it into feet, which is what they normally do, balls are played into the feet and they link up, and you have to go in behind. And Lukaku and Martinez didn't make enough runs in behind.
That's right.
Staying with Inter, it looks set that Conte's going to leave. Allegri may be taking charge. What do you think about that?
It's interesting, because after the game, he gave a long interview to Sky Italia, Conte, saying, like, this has been really hard for me this season, for my family. And you really sense the frustration that he had in him. And I think he will leave the club. There's a big meeting on Tuesday, tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday. And I think he will leave. I don't know if it's because maybe he feels the project is not right up there for him. And you and I talked about that on the ESPN FC show a couple of days ago. What makes him unhappy? I don't really know, because they've got money. This is a good squad already. This is a positive season. Second in the league, final of the Europa League. It could have gone much better. Maybe he's frustrated that Juve were there for the taking and they sort of missed that chance. And maybe he was disappointed by his own tactics, as we've been saying, in that final. I don't know, but
But it's a strange one. Why would you leave?
I think he's a coach now that's had so much success. Remember, he won three titles on the trot. He then did very well with Italy, with a very poor side at the European Championships. Yeah. Then he goes to Chelsea and wins the title in his first season, then has a poor second, so he then throws his toys out the pram and leaves. And I think he expected to go and challenge this season. And when he doesn't, he makes every other excuse. I love him as a coach. I'm not sure about his management skills.
Well, Ben Chilwell is expected to join Chelsea this week after a deal was agreed between Chelsea and Leicester. Is £50 million right price for you for a player like Chilwell?
2 years ago, I'd have laughed you out of the room because I watched him play in Toulon for the under-21s.
Yes,
and I think
that.
He was England's least impressive player. He looked very nervous. And when he played, when Christian Fuchs couldn't play, he came into the side and I thought he looked nervous, he looked weak, he didn't defend particularly well. But that's all changed over the last couple of years. He's grown in confidence. He looks as though he can do everything. He looks like Luke Shaw did when he was at Southampton.
Yeah.
You know, and so 50 million is probably a little bit too much, but he's still going to be an exceptional left back, whether he's in a left wing back position or whether he's a normal left back. I think it'd be a great success for Chelsea.
And 50 million seems to be the price. Walker, Mendy, Wan-Bissaka, more or less that kind of amount price for fullbacks.
Sort of wages you've earned over the last couple of weeks. Now, Thiago Silva, another Chelsea target. Thiago Silva to Chelsea. Do you think that's a good move for him or for the club and for the club?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to say a big thank you to Thiago Silva. He gave 8 years to PSG. He was great. Of course, there were lows, but there was a lot of highs as well. I thought he did well against Bayern in a tough game against Lewandowski. And I think I would have loved him to lift that trophy for his last ever PSG game. It was not to be, but I think he would be good for Chelsea because he's got that experience and he's free as well. I mean, he will have a signing on fee and high wages, but in the sense that if you put all your money on Chilwell and Havertz, for example, and then you're still in the centre-back, he's there, not costing you anything in transfer fees. I think that's a really good deal, even if he's 35. I think there's so much experience there. He's a really great character, personality to have in your dressing room.
So would you say that's his greatest strength at the moment? His experience, his character, his knowledge?
Yeah.
To lead the other Chelsea centre-halves?
Yeah, and I think the younger centre-halves will learn from him a lot, even if the language might be a little bit of a barrier at some point, but that can be sorted. But I think, and physically, he's still so fit. And maybe the pace of the Premier League might be an issue. Maybe we'll have to adapt a little bit. I don't know how many games he would play, but I expect this deal to go through, and I expect it to be a good signing. Mino Raiola announced on Sunday that Paul Pogba was staying at Manchester United, Robbo, and that maybe talks for a new deal would start, and maybe he could even extend his deal. If you were Pogba, would you be okay to stay, happy to stay? And if you were Ed Woodward, would that be a good deal for you to keep him and extend his deal?
I think I would say yes to both counts. I think Paul Pogba has started to show everybody what a great player he can be, because when he was at Juventus, I thought he was the best midfield player in the world at times.
When he
at the World Cup, when he was dominating matches with his combination of strength, his ability to run beyond people, his ability to manipulate the ball, to find a pass. Some of his passing is magnificent. I think he needs to play week in, week out, get away from the injuries that he's had, but you can't avoid that sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be good for him to stay and prove that he is a top class player for Manchester United. And I think Manchester United should keep him, because without him, I don't think they can go on to that next level. You know, to get somebody in to replace him, what are you going to have to spend? He can still be the world's best midfield player if they can get the best out of him.
And I think he helps if you're Raiola and Pogba of staying, because you know that there might not be anyone bringing the money to United right now to come and get you. Real Madrid is his dream, but they're not going to spend 100 million on him this summer. They don't have that money and they don't want to anyway. So it's good for you, for your own strategy, in a way, to say like, okay, we're going to stay. Let's open talks for a new deal. And it works. But I think he's convinced also by the project. If they go and sign Sancho, plus what they've built this season, I think he knows that this could be an exciting thing to be part of.
Does Solskjaer's success encourage him to stay? Or is it?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that.
He gets on well with him?
Yes, definitely. And he had him when he was a reserve coach at United.
Yeah.
So they've known each other for so long. So I think that works as well together.
Now, if finish the Men's Champions League, we're going into the Women's Champions League. Can anybody stop Lyon winning it?
That's the question, Robbo. They've won four in a row now, six in the last 10 years, I think, Champions League. They've been so dominant. They've got not just the most money, but the best players.
Yep.
And they treat this team like the men's team, you know, in terms of facilities, transportation, everything. You know, they look after those girls so well. And I think that's also why they've been so successful for all those years. And I think they played the semi-final against PSG on Tuesday night. This is a huge game. They met 2 weeks ago in the French Cup final. It was 0-0, went to penalties, and Lyon won that penalties. But PSG caused them a little bit of trouble. PSG have a great team as well. They beat Arsenal in the quarterfinals on Saturday night. This would be great. And then the other semi-final is Wolfsburg against Barcelona, which is a different style of football, but this could be very interesting as well. But I think if Lyon beat PSG, then they'd be huge favourite to retain the title. Harry Maguire made the headlines for the wrong reason, Robo. He was on holidays in Greece, got arrested. He awaits trial for allegedly having a fight with policemen or something. We don't know exactly all the details, but what do you think about his captaincy at United? Do you think they should strip him off the armband?
I think they will have to wait until he's either charged or he's guilty.
Yeah.
Because if he's not guilty, then he's got every right to keep the captaincy, because he'll say, I'm not guilty, so why am I being charged? Why am I losing the captaincy? Yeah. But if he is found guilty, I mean, there'll be more implications, but he's going to have to lose the captaincy. You can't trust, if you can't trust the player to go and behave himself away from the club, he's not a great example for the other players, and you have to discipline him in some way. And the only way you're really going to discipline, because you still want him to be a top centre half and be your main player, I think he played nearly every minute of Manchester United season, so yes, you still want to keep him as your main centre half. So the only punishment you can really give him is maybe a fine and take the captaincy away from him. And I'm not sure it'd do him any harm. If he had the captaincy taken away from him, he'd still be a top class player.
You're right. And I mean, people are saying like, oh, but he's not that kind of guy, he's intelligent and he's good. Yeah, but maybe sometimes you can lose it. It happens, especially if you've been drinking maybe or something. Or maybe, like you said, he hasn't done anything wrong. He reacted because, for whatever reasons, and it would be clear. But until that decision is made by court in Greece or something, United will, I guess, have to wait and see.
Over the years, there's been lots of players, captains, that have done things wrong.
Yeah.
And still not lost the captaincy and come back even better, you know. So he may be able to get away with it.
You're
but
right.
if he's found guilty, I'm sure he'll lose the captaincy. Now, while all the Champions League was going on, people forgot about Liga.
Yes!
It started at the weekend and it started with the bang, Jules.
It was really good, Robo, this weekend. So, I mean, PSG didn't play because obviously they were in Champions League final. Lyon, their game was postponed because they went to the semi-final. The Marseille game was postponed against Saint-Etienne because they had four or five, actually.
So it really started with the pain then.
It did. But because they had COVID, players tested positive for COVID, including Dimitri Payet and Steven Mandanda. But the rest, it was good. We saw Amin Gouiri, the 20-year-old striker at Nice, who signed from Lyon, who is a really talented young player who scored two goals and was fantastic. We saw Lille, Arthur playing really well against Rennes, and then Rennes bring on Eduardo Camavinga, the 18-year-old who changed the game completely, who was fantastic as well. We saw good stuff from Nîmes, who won 4-0, who are the current leaders, you know, first leaders in the league this season, who did really well again, who have they signed a left-back from Norway who's fantastic. There was loads of good things, new players, new faces, new tactics, new managers. I thought it was really enjoyable. It was really good.
Liga is a lot better league than people give it credit for.
Exactly. And I think, thank you for saying it, and it's true, and you've commentated for many years. They are talented. Of course, they are bad games. Of course, you will have bad games. You've got bad games in every league. You've got bad players in every league. And yes, it's not as intense as the Premier League. They don't run as much as in the Bundesliga. Maybe not as technically gifted as in La Liga.
But why do Premier League teams keep going to Liga to get players out of them?
Thank you. You know what? You can come back.
You can come
back on Thursday.
I say all the right things for you.
Robo, Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, told media on Sunday that UEFA are thinking about maybe keeping this one-legged format and not go back to the home and away two-legged knockout stages. What would you do if you were the UEFA president?
Well, from a personal point of view, it halves my money for the games that I do, so I wouldn't be too happy with it. But in terms of entertainment, I think it's been magnificent. Is he talking about doing it on neutral territory like they have done on this, or is he talking about, you know, one team gets home advantage? That's the big question.
That was a bit more in the air. I think they like the idea of a final eight somewhere where you can bring all the fans when it's safe to do, and you've got different stadiums. Because what I thought about the final last night, the pitch at the Stadio de la Luce was really bad for a game like this, for two teams who are so good technically. But of course it would be bad because you've played so many games in such a short, so if you think about it a bit differently, and maybe you have more stadiums than just two like in Lisbon.
Or the other thing you can do is that, to put more pressure on the group games, the team that ends up top of the group gets home advantage against a team who comes second in the next group. So that would, and then when they go through, that advantage still stays.
And what do you say to people though who rightly so point out that last season the home and away
was fantastic. The Spurs-Ajax game, the City-Spurs game, the Barca-Liverpool games, those were there. They were so good because it was home and away over two legs.
I think they'll stick with the home and away legs. I think that's how European football has been for many, many years. I think they'll stick with it because it has worked. The Champions League has always been a good competition. I think everybody's been desperate for football to come back and see top quality football, which we saw over the last few weeks. But it's been a novelty more than and I think they will go back to the two-legged ties. Now, Barcelona, there's a club in a right old mess. And now, to add insult to injury, Pjanic has proved positive for COVID. Where do they go from here?
Oh my God, Robert. Can you just imagine, with everything happening, so you sack your manager, you appoint a new one, you sack your sporting director, you appoint a new one. There's still uncertainty over the elections, over Bartomeu as a president. You've got Messi, who's not sure about staying, who probably wants more to leave than to stay. You try to rebuild your team. You don't have much money. The one player that you already have signed, at least one of the main ones, is Pjanic. And he's positive to COVID. He would have to self-isolate for 2 weeks. So miss quite a big chunk of pre-season, really, when you think about it, because they go back mid-September to play again in La Liga. So I'm not sure in what kind of fitness he will be back then. He might miss the start of La Liga because he won't be fit, won't have doing enough pre-season. It's an absolute nightmare for them. It's the worst thing that could happen on top of all the worst things
that
happened.
He's a player, I think, that needs a good start at Barcelona.
Because people questioned the
transfer. You know, I think Pjanic didn't play well at Juventus, mainly because of Sarri's tactics rather than him not being a very good player. Because when he was at Roma, he was a magnificent passer of the ball. He's a more creative midfield player. At Juventus this last season under Sarri, he's been a holding midfield player who passes it square and backwards, a bit like Jorginho did under Sarri.
So
I think he needed a good start at Barcelona for him and for the club.
And I think, his edge as well. I think pre-season and all that fitness work that you do, even if you play for a team that has a lot of the ball and maybe doesn't run as much as if you're Getafe, for example, I don't know, somewhere, it's still very important. And I think he might be chasing that kind of form through the season because he would have missed on those crucial 2 weeks. It's crazy. It's really crazy. Robbo, thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
For coming over. Thank you for replacing Gab so brilliantly. Some would say even better than Gab Jobs.
Nobody
Who
can outdo
marketing?
Gab.
We'll be back with you, Robbo, on Thursday. We'll look into the Community Shield, which is coming up, the first game really of the English season on Saturday between Liverpool and Arsenal. There'll be plenty of other things to look into. Until then, Robbo, stay safe. Everyone stay safe. And we look forward to seeing you on Thursday.